Hey, city commissioners recognized the efforts of the ARC Park team at this week's county commission meeting. Hayes Post reporter Becky Kaiser speaks with Vice Mayor Mason Reuter as well as City Manager Toby Doherty about that and more on this episode of the Post podcast.
We had kicking off last night, actually, a couple of proclamations made by the mayor, Sandy Jacobs, as first of all, with October being Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And then the second one was kind of a surprise, Mason, for somebody we have heard quite a bit from the last, oh gosh, what, 2 years or more. It's going to be Sarah Meitner Day on September 29th in connection with the official ribbon cutting of the ARC Park.
It is. It was a nice surprise to do that for Sarah and her team and show that, I mean, it was just an astronomical feat of what they did in the middle of a global pandemic to get the community together for such a, and it's an amazing facility out there. It's just, it's a blast for everybody, and they did an amazing job, and what a better way to do that than proclaim it Sarah Meitner Day.
And for everybody being the key there, that this is accessible to anyone who maybe have an accessibility problem, but they can come and play in the park, as can their friends and relatives who do not have accessibility problems. And it's just everybody's there together and having a good time. And Toby, I wanted to ask you, this is the reason Sarah and her team are being praised so much is because this was a grassroots effort. It was endorsed by the city, but it's not a city project per se.
It was a total grassroots effort, and they didn't raise money and turn it over to us to manage this project. They not only raised money, but Sarah and Brent and Kathy, they managed the project, and they're the ones that solicited the proposals from the contractors. And Jeff Boyle and Chris Smith at the Parks Department, I know they offered advice and input on it. But the art group did the heavy lifting on this, and it was only at the very end that we got involved and in helping them clean a few things up and keeping things on track. And with any project like this, you're going to have things that don't go right. And so we were able to lend our experience, in order to keep them on track and with their contractors and open successfully. So this was a very good project on their end.
And the Parks Department and the city is involved in the parking lot that is there, and then also some of the grass works.
Yeah, so the city commission did give a little cash to the project, I believe $250,000, and then the city did commit to building the parking lot. And so that was a city project. And then the Parks Department staff have handled the grass around the parking lot and that area. And then they've also been assistive in the seating and basically prepping of the areas outside of the play areas that were built to make sure that it's going to go back to natural as quick as possible.
Now, who is going to maintain this park and the grass and the equipment?
It'll be ours once it's fully complete and we accept it. It'll be ours, and so it'll be just put into our stockpile of parks equipment.
That's one of the positives about Hayes that people talk about, I think, Mason, is the quality of life, and that, and the city commission, it puts some money aside for those kinds of efforts. And we do have a lot of parks spread across the community.
We do. I think since, the 90s, we've at least doubled in size and the amount of parks and total area we have for outdoor activities. And you go by all of them, and they're always, always busy.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see all the kids and everybody out there playing and using them. They're definitely used. And Jeff and his crew, they really take pride in the parks. I mean, we have some of the best parks around. I know that for sure.
And speaking of cooperative efforts, a lot of the clubs and organizations in town also help with those efforts and kind of take care of the parks, make sure they're cleaned up.
They do. And that kind of community involvement is what's great. I mean, because everybody takes pride in what we do in Hayes. So it's a community effort, and it's good to see.
Well, let's talk about the thing that has been catching attention recently, the RHID request for rehabbing of the former St. Joseph School in Hayes, in downtown Hayes. it is, in addition to this being kind of a complicated process in the first place, Toby, this is an historic building too. So there are other qualifiers that the developer from Atchison will have to meet. But we did get a full endorsement last night from the Hays City Commission to let's do this. And the RHID policy is also predicated by the state. There are many, many rules that you have to follow.
Right. Our RHID is, it's a rural housing incentive district is what it's called, and it is prescribed by state law. That law was amended recently to allow for the renovation and creation of housing in central business districts. Typically, it had just been for the creation of new housing. So that's what this developer is looking to take advantage of. And what an RHID is essentially it takes the tax increment that is generated by the improvement, and then it rebates that back to the developer to help cover some of the costs of renovation. As you mentioned, this is a historic building. It wasn't designed for pretty much any standard that we have today, except for aesthetics. It's very, very beautiful. So those are typically very expensive endeavors when you go to renovate them, to put apartments in there, to put an elevator in, to make it handicap accessible. I mean, there's lots of costs that are involved in converting something like that. And so the RHID can help offset some of those costs. And then because it is a historic property, the developer can take advantage of some state and federal tax credits in order to help also fund the project. But in the end, we would get we'll get 12 units of moderate to income housing, which is, this is not going to be high-end, very expensive market rate units. So it's housing that we definitely need.
And Mason, the RHID is also based on housing needs analysis. And Kim Rupp, finance director, has been talking about the most recent housing study that was done in Hays was back in 2017 by the Docking Institute at Fort Hays State University. And it shows that this is exactly a level of housing that we need in Hays.
We do. I mean, that study shows we need housing. We're outpacing quality housing to population at a pretty steady rate. So these kind of projects are exactly what the housing study is hoping to address. And our policy is to help move that along as quick as possible. And the developer has done, in his previous projects that we've explored, he's done a pretty amazing job at what he does, because I think him and his group focus on historic buildings.
This is kind of his thing.
It's in his wheelhouse, and they look absolutely incredible when they're all completed. He's done some around the state, and I hope it follows that same suit to what he's doing.
Toby, the housing study is just about outdated. The city has requested a new one, updated one, and you've got the preliminary results?
We've seen the draft. Docking Institute at Fort Hays is doing that. We've seen the initial draft. Colin Belzer, the assistant manager, Doug Williams, economic development director, myself, reviewed. We had a call with the docking staff and offered some input feedback. Had a few questions, and they are incorporating those questions and some of the stuff that we talked about into the final report. We hope to see that in a few weeks. We've told them, take your time. You know, we want to make sure that we don't want to rush on this. So, you know, we're hoping by the end of October we can see something. I can tell you from the preliminary draft, not a lot's changed. The 2017 study showed that when you break down Hays by demographic profile of its residents, and then figure out what each sector can spend on housing, and then what we have available for them, we have a shortfall of over 1,000 units for our lowest income residents, and that didn't get any better. And but we have a shortage of housing almost on all levels. And so when you look at the projections from 2017, that we need to build X amount of houses per year, we're not building that either. So we just keep getting a little bit further behind the curve. And so that's why the governing body could make the determination last night that, yes, we have a shortfall of this type of housing.
It absolutely fits. One thing I want to make sure that we clarify for people, that we were talking about the money that will come back to the developer for some of his costs. And this that money is, as Kim pointed out last night, this has been owned by the Salina Diocese, and that's a religious group, so they have not been paying property tax. They're not required to. It will change. There will be property tax that will be required of the property, but it will not go to the entities that normally collect it for a while.
Right. So it has been tax exempt, and on a typical RHID, if you're looking at a brownfield development, that it's a parcel that's really not generating much taxes and you build improvements on it. The idea is you're better off getting the improvements if you need the improvements more than you need the taxes, knowing it will go on the tax rolls at some time. In the Central Business District, if a building gets renovated that was already paying taxes, that tax rate would stay the same and only the increment would be rebated back. In this case, the increment is 100% because it wasn't paying taxes. Now, not all of the taxes are rebated. So there's 1.5 mils that goes to the state. That is not eligible. And then when you break down the USD 489 levy, part of it's the local option levy and part of it's the state levy that's collected and then distributed back to all schools. That 20 mils for USD 489 is also not eligible. So there will be some taxes generated for the state and the school district. It's just the cities, the county, and a good portion of the school district's taxes are foregone.
Well, this will be an interesting project as it moves forward. Also, there was a great presentation last night, Mason, about the Interstate 70 exit, the west exit in Hayes, and replacement of that bridge, which has been on the radar for KDOT and Ellis County and Hayes for quite a while. But they decided, you know what, now that we have so much growth going on north of I-70, maybe we need to think about making that a better bridge and better traffic flow. So we got an update on what's going to happen in keeping with the idea that the, especially the travel plaza that will be built soon is going to make a lot of traffic up there.
Yeah, it's going to increase traffic quite a bit. I mean, with the Northwest Business Corridor project moving forward, that's going to divert a lot of truck traffic or just traffic that's needing to get south right over to that area anyway. It's a pretty congested area. They talked last night about how the entrances, especially to like Fairground Road, are too close to the off-ramp and whatnot. So it addresses a bunch of problems aside from just replacing a bridge like they normally would. It almost prepares this corridor for future expansion and growth in that area, which we're starting to see.
And Toby, this is a KDOT project with the city and county involved. The engineering for it, KDOT is ready to look at that and to help pay for that. But it's not actually, the construction has not actually been approved yet.
Right. And just to clarify, this is totally a KDOT project.
Totally KDOT.
Right. We're doing work to improve the intersection as part of the D&J land development that's happening, the Travel Plaza. And the county has their project to the Northwest Corridor project. But those are independent from this. So this project is total KDOT. They're looking to tie into our two projects, you know, to make sure it all can flow seamlessly. But the project has received funding for engineering, but not for construction. And so that's what we're trying to do right now is to build awareness for the benefits of this project. And to me, the biggest benefit is if they just did a simple replacement of the bridge, that intersection could be shut down for a year or more. And so you could have an entire westbound lane of traffic and southbound going to north that wouldn't be able to utilize the bridge for a year. I mean, people may remember what happened at Abilene when that intersection was replaced and they were down for almost a year. Mm. So the way they're doing it keeps the intersection open about 90% of the time of the project, which is good for the travel plaza that's going in, the dealership that's up there now, all of the businesses north, the Hess, the M&Ds, the Goodman Energy Center, the Fort Hays University has a rodeo up there, or the indoor rodeo facility, Ellis County Concrete. I mean, you have a lot of businesses up there that would be very much nonplussed if it was completely closed now. We're trying to lobby right now to make sure KDOT does assign funding priority for this so it does get funded and hopefully constructed in 2024.